call the February 1st meeting of the Legislative Board of Retirement Benefits session. First bill we're speaking of is House Bill 576. Pertaining to AMU teachers. Mr. Chairman, I guess for the record then, regarding the fiscal note for the teachers portion of the House Bill 576, based on, you know, the legal input that I received yesterday and early this morning, the service under previous laws would be allowable. So the fiscal impact of this particular bill teacher side would be zero, so we're going to be preparing a revised fiscal note to show this as a zero cost and to, under our analysis, state the reasons why it is a zero cost. My recommendation in this area would be that since it is covered by the law, and that that our position would be one of recommending that this particular section be removed. Just for the sake of clarity in the chapter. The other section, which refers to the credit under the PERS system, I think is something that we should continue to discuss at this time.
Ken? Paul, is it true that this fiscal note, which is in two sections, the PERS and the TERS section, that it could be fixed up essentially just by removing the TERS section?
Well,
that the effect on the PERS would be the same as you'd calculated.
That's correct.
And no effect as it currently stands on the teacher system.
Right. So the only thing I'm saying is that for documentation or audit trail or whatever, since it is written against the retirement program, even though it would be a zero cost, there would still be a zero cost note prepared, even if initially it was determined with zero cost. So one would have to be prepared to show that fiscal note has been superseded.
Well,
but as far as purposes of our discussion here, I think it should be recognized that there will be a zero cost fiscal note in the teachers.
I think that the bill is certainly going to be changed in committee, but for the purposes of discharging the board's responsibility.
Do you believe that someone is going to rewrite this first section to cover some purpose?
It will either be rewritten to where it does change existing law, or removed, and I can't predict which of those.
Now, do we need to treat this in two separate parts, or can we?
I think it would probably be better to do that. What we might do is to say accept the fiscal note with the stipulated understanding that it will be changed and reflect a zero fiscal impact.
The PERS fiscal note. You would accept.
No, the PERS.
Which will be zero.
Right.
Okay.
I think we should do that part and then do the next part.
And just point out that first section has no effect.
So we don't really need to make any further recommendations other than that, just to say we have reviewed it and found existing law would take care of those teachers with prior service at AMU, and therefore that there is no effect from this.
Well, maybe that's the same thing as I'm thinking of. It seems to me that I, for my part, I intend to reject that first section because I, as I said yesterday, it's technically at fault. It's technically faulty, and I don't think it accomplishes any purpose that I can recognize as being a reasonable one. So I don't want to accept, you know, that as it is. I'd want to reject the whole section.
Okay. Right now, as best we can, that section is already accomplished in the current.
Yeah, we could vote that way to reject it as it is because it's already with the reason being that it's already accomplished under existing law.
What about the purse part?
Then we could discuss the purse part.
Yeah. Okay.
So if anyone wanted.
The way we're doing this
is to accept the fiscal note first with the understanding that it would be zero, and then second part, if you wanted to, would be to reject the first part of the bill dealing with teachers' retirement.
I'm not sure what that means to reject something that has no effect. But
see, otherwise we'll end up not having any recommendation on it. Can we need something on that?
I would think that what you would want to do is to point out that it has no effect.
Yeah, we don't really need to make a recommendation.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't want it to go through.
I assure you that it won't.
I think we could recommend that this section be removed because
that would make sense.
It's already being accomplished under existing law.
Yeah. I think that's
and then make whatever recommendation you choose to about the
fiscal note of $0 on it.
Right. I'll just put accept the fiscal note.
We need a motion on that.
Yes.
And I so move.
Second.
Question.
Discussion. Question.
And as I understand the motion, we are moving to. There's some other word besides reject the first part because it served no useful purpose, and the purpose that we see in it is already accomplished under existing law, and we do accept a figure of $0 as a fiscal note.
Well, perhaps it'd be better to say recommend the deletion of the first part rather than reject.
Yeah, I was thinking for the report that there's this zero impact part would be amongst us, and what will appear on the report is just we accept the fiscal note, and the fiscal note will be such that it has zero impact on the teacher system. In other words, this is our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and recommend.
I want to make sure as we clarify that it's on the teacher's own, because we do have a first sight.
Right, and we're accepting that part as is. Okay, and recommend that the.
What part are we accepting as is?
We haven't discussed that.
Okay, recommend that the portion affecting the teacher system be
deleted
or changed since it has no effect as it currently stands.
I would say deleted.
Okay.
And that leaves it up to them to do something about it or not.
Right.
Question?
Are there any, let me clear it up easier, are there any objections? Then we'll, without objection, we'll accept the motion to recommend that portion be deleted.
I think we'd probably just show that as what unanimous and go from there.
Okay, then that brings us to the second part of the PERS. might ask you just to give a quick overview of that one if you would.
Well, in the PERS system, the classified positions which are not covered, would not be eligible for claiming as outside service under the PERS, under this bill would allow them to be bought in under the PERS system. For example, would be maybe a secretary or any of the classified employees at that school that would not qualify for the teacher system, under this bill would be allowed to buy that service in under the PERS system. There's a particular method for buying it in, depending on whether you're retired, currently active, or a deferred vested member. Deferred vested meaning that you have 5 years of service, you're vested on the system, but you're currently terminated, and you have left your money in the system. Those provisions, as provided there, are similar, if not almost identical, to the way military service is bought in under the PERS system. That's basically what the bill is. It does establish that you have to have 5 years at AMU, that you can buy in no more than 5 years. So what we're speaking of is truly 5 years for those people that have five or more years. Mm-hmm. The 5 years would be the month that you buy in. Since the act takes effect July 1 of 78, it'd be my understanding that that as of that date, those people who have service already on their records would have the ability to buy it in. So by its construction, it has the appearance of being retroactive. For example, in C, it says a retired employee on July 1 of 78 is eligible to receive increased benefits. If it weren't retroactive, there would be no way they could ever draw an increased benefit. So, because they were already retired at that point in time, so the point being that the way this is written, it has the effect of retroactiveness, which means that anybody who's ever had any time as a public employee, or quote, public employee at AMU, would be able to buy that service in under the PERS system.
Now, in the first paragraph on page 2, that is referred to retroactive, the last sentence there.
So that's rather clear there, that's correct.
Now would he have to pay more than just his own share?
No, here he would pay 6% times the number of years that he had at the at AMU times
the number of years.
The actual compensation, or the calculated annual compensation for those employees.
And then the state picks up the employer.
During 1978, or the year they first become vested, which is really the last year in their vesting period, or 1978 if they're being initialized at that point. So in effect, it's times are, on an ongoing basis, it'd be times their last year's salary in the year that they vest, the fifth year's salary, times 6% times each year of AMU up to 5 years, but not less than 5 years, so it's always going to be 5 years.
I understand this must be five and it can't be more than five.
Right.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. And what comparison do we have to make with that, in some other situation.
I don't know, I guess we could ask the person who drafted the bill.
I was thinking this morning, last night, it'd be nice if they'd attached a little tab on here with the rationale how this ever came to be, you know.
You almost have the feeling that they have designed this to fit a particular person. No more than five, or no less than five.
I think I can answer that pretty easily in this case. The second 5 years came because it was drafted to be like the military service.
But you didn't have to have 5 years to qualify. You could have five.
The first five was there because the bill was designed. The first five was arbitrary, and it's coincidental that they're both 5 years. It was put in the bill because it was designed to help, quote, long-time AMU employees. Well, what's a long-time AMU employee? One who had worked there arbitrarily at, say, at least 5 years. And this was sort of written down in, well, you know, what kind of bill do you want, okay? Well, how much service do you want to require? In other words, you don't know that the desire wasn't to grant AMU employment for someone who had been employed there for a period of 6 months and then moved on. They would not have been, you know, seriously impacted by the universities folding up and losing their accreditation and so forth.
But the upper limit was to coincide with that
amount
for military.
And that just got overlaid, and it's coincidental that they're both 5 years.
Do they have to be also vested in the PERS system to claim this, or could they just have that 5 years and that would vest them in the PERS system?
No, they have to be vested.
Yeah, because it says it may not be used to satisfy credited service requirements for normal retirement.
Well,
I would think that...
Yeah, right, in Section A, a vested employee is entitled.
I would think that the concept of what is happening here is what we should be addressing in this bill. It should be recognized that outside service under the teacher's retirement system was established for the purpose of attracting to the state of Alaska teachers. And that's why they allowed teachers to come from other states and buy in that service up to a limit of 10 years, so that those teachers would leave other states and as an incentive would be able to bring those years of service to the state, join the TRS system and receive credit for those previous years. Was an incentive to get teachers to the state of Alaska during that period of time when there was a shortage of teachers. Now it's been determined that there's an excess number of teachers in Alaska. The incentive that there are, even though there are particular areas that are not able to attract teachers, in general for the state there's more applications than ratio of about 3 to 1, from what I understand, speaking of the Department of Education. So that the incentive to pay for this benefit is no longer there, and the need to use it as a vehicle for bringing people or bringing teachers or trying to attract teachers to the state of Alaska, that is no longer needed. And that's why the full actuarial cost of providing that benefit is now being borne by the employee, effective July 1, 78. Now in the PERS system, if you take this concept of what is the idea of offering something like this, a buy-in, for lack of a better term, like you call it, some type of competent outside service or the ability to buy in that service. Why is that being offered? Well, it doesn't serve the purpose of trying to attract particularly a qualified employee to come to the state of Alaska to work at AMU. Those employees are here. Okay. So the philosophy of allowing that service to be bought in, other than the fact that you're granting it, it's not serving any purpose. It doesn't serve a retirement purpose as far as the total system of the purpose of the retirement system is to attract and retain qualified employees with the state or its political subdivisions. Okay? That's that AMU is not the state, or it is not the political subdivision, counterproductive to what the purpose of the chapter is. Even stepping back and saying, let's not look at the purpose of the retirement system or the purpose of the chapter. What purpose does it serve as far as AMU to attract and retain qualified employees to stay at AMU? It doesn't. If anything, it's counterproductive in the sense that those that serve 5 years at AMU have a tendency to say, let's quit, join a PERS employer so they can buy that service in. So if anything, you have the effect of taking employees away from AMU rather than reinforcing their ability to attract employees. That's a consideration. The final consideration is that if those employees at AMU, the employer AMU is not participating in any way in the system. So the benefit for that, the benefit, if there is, quote, the benefit being rendered to AMU, is the cost of that is not being picked up by AMU in any manner. So that cost is going to have to be shared by either one or employer, which in this case, why that cost could be to the state, or it's going to be shared by the system and all employers. In all those areas, I see it to be either contrary to the purpose of the chapter, contrary to the to what would be the intent of the AMU to retain this qualified employees, and then contrary to the funding vehicle, which already allows a participating employer to allow to go back and have written or previous service granted for its own employment, but nowhere has it ever been granted for employment at another employer. The only exception that I've seen in the PERS system is the ability to buy in military service. I've asked the question, why is military service in either system allowed to be bought in? And the answer is, as I understand it, is some states, for example, like Minnesota, paid a bonus to its veterans. Other states like California set up a CalVet loan where you could buy homes at a low interest rate on a CalVet, California vet loan. Alaska didn't have something like that, so their answer to that was to allow military service to be bought in.
Well,
I think from my standpoint, it should have been in a retirement system, but it is in the retirement system. I think you understand where that came from. In some cases, it's a little counterproductive, the idea that, for example, military service, have got career military that have retired that are also working for the state now, or and other employers that are bought that military service in are going to draw benefits, so we're paying it. The country, if you want to look at it in total picture, is paying a double benefit for the same service.
Well,
that's neither here nor there as far as this use is concerned.
I think the military service is twofold, though. You know, the beginning of it came with Alaskans who were here, were teaching, left and went away, and then came back, and there was a void, and so they were compensated for that, and that was on the idea mainly as a bonus, I think.
And
the other aspect,
service.
The second thing was that military service, which was a national requirement, conflicted with the time that you could have had in grade in career and education, which happened to be my case, so I know this pretty well, so I see those two dimensions. But aside from that, then going back to the...
I think there was an expansion on it.
Right, yeah, that's right. You know, we haven't heard the last of it yet. So vibrating going on. And the other instance, maybe I'll change my mind about this view, but on this situation with PERS, it seems to me that the PERS, in this case, the PERS fund tends to become a tempering tank for some kind of misfortune. If you call it misfortune, economic or career otherwise, for people who are working for an institution which then closes out and so they go elsewhere to work. So that's another gap for void. And so, as I say, the PERS fund becomes a tempering tank to temper the misfortune of those individuals who didn't and weren't qualified in some other retirement program. And I say momentarily, I resist this, and I would want to be consistent about that not only PERS but TRS, it seemed to me that this is counter purposes to the intent of the funds.
Yeah, however, on that subject, they do allow in the PERS, and I don't know, but I would assume in the TERS also, that all territorial services is credited, and the state pays the whole shot, isn't that right?
Right, and I think what's being recognized there is that an employer can determine what past service with itself it'll credit, and they pick up a past service liability. In the case of the territorial service, the state has determined that territorial service is really like service to the state, and they decided to recognize that past service, and they pay it, and the state pays for that particular past service of territorial service.
It wouldn't pay for the state
right.
of Washington or Colorado.
Right. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I supported that legislation. I think, however, you know, service that those employees had with the territory or whatever, you know, the fire marshals, you can't. I don't think anything that you can't get. You know, if you work in Alaska for some government entity before it became a state, that is not credited. You know. There are some things for that, but however, a lot of those positions that the people held, they also were eligible for retirement benefits under like the federal system.
That's totally true. Mm-hmm. There's any service with the territory, or is brought in free under the PERS, regardless of the agency, department, et cetera, that it was performed at. In addition, there is also certain federal service that is recognized. In the last 3 years, I've asked myself and many of the people in my division, why is that particular federal service is being allowed to be brought in? It's always been, well, they just took care of a couple other people. Been special legislation, special interest legislation, and in particular there were names associated with those particular individuals that are longtime Alaskans, and that's a fact. So I don't think it has any bearing on this issue, or what I'm trying to say is that I would question the tendency to continue that type of practice. It's not a valid, not a practice itself should be continued today or at any time as a standpoint itself of using the PERS system as a vehicle for
addressing wrongs,
addressing the economic ills of anyone. Mm-hmm. See, I'm not even sure, and I didn't bring this up, I'm not sure what type of retirement benefit AMU offers for its teachers or for its classified employees. And I would assume that there'd be something there. You know, I guess I could easily have one of my staff call up there and say, you know, do you provide any type of retirement benefit? Do you have any type of layoff benefit? Do you have any type of workman's comp? And I'm sure these things are there. I can't say 100%, but I just about bet that they are.
Ken?
Well, I think Stan, you know, kind of put his finger on it and saying the first question is the retirement system the appropriate way to address that kind of problem? If the answer to that is no, then it doesn't matter whether they have one or not, you know, or indeed, you know, what kinds of hardships ex AMU people are enduring. If you answer that question no. In other words, if you do not find that there is a public purpose in that that's being served by the expenditure of public funds, if you decide that, well, it depends on the kind of hardship, you know, or the degree of hardship, or the merit of the service that was rendered, although not to the state, then I think you might want to delve deeper and determine the exact nature of the hardship. But if you answer the more general question in the negative, then really there's no reason to pursue it further.
I think even along that same line, if it's answered in the negative, then I think there's no question that the bill should be opposed. If it's answered in the positive, then the next question is, from a public standpoint, what is the appropriate way to address it? Is that type of a public service, whether it's considered a social service, a welfare service, or however you want to term it, is that more appropriately handled through a general fund expenditure, a particular appropriation to straight from the general fund to AMU for whatever purpose, to buoy up the ills that as a result of their whatever, is that the appropriate place, which I would think it would be, or is it more appropriate to go to a trust fund supported by various employers, but very specific employers, to use their funds to buoy up something that's a social issue?
I'm wondering, though, if the system is being consistent in that teachers now under the TERS can buy in service, and yet we would deny that for PERS people. I tend to agree with the philosophy expressed, but at the same time, I wonder if we're not being inconsistent.
Well, now you're making the comparison that a teacher can buy in service, outside service.
That's outside service.
Or entity.
And realizing PERS does not have that feature.
I think the distinction there is that the idea for allowing that buy-in of outside service was, like, again, I said, serve the function of the school district by attracting the teachers, so they had a labor market to draw from.
Yes, but it could be argued at the time AMU started that teacher need was not so great. Because I was up there when AMU started, and there was not the dire need for teachers that was before. Maybe we get off on a tangent.
I'd like to pursue your third point a little bit in that, can or was AMU eligible to join PERS or TERS when they were accredited?
No.
And when would they have been eligible?
They never would be eligible.
Under PERS?
No. Under TERS?
PERS.
Or PERS, either one.
And they aren't now eligible?
No.
Unless they come up with some other redeeming feature, I'd like to aim towards a motion which would in effect would say we do not recommend passage of this, and because, you know, as it is right now, we're looking for some redeeming feature which I don't see. And it might take till noon to do that.
What is the status of, I guess, other institutes of higher learning? I only can think of one, but Sheldon Jackson, are they eligible for anything under either program?
Sheldon Jackson and AMU are not eligible to participate under PERS. Both Sheldon Jackson, Jackson and AMU qualify for outside service under the TERS. But neither as an entity on the self or eligible to participate.
But the individual.
Can you easily give me an overview of those groups eligible to join either one? Either teachers or, either teachers or PERS.
Right, it's under the PERS, it's a public or quasi-public organization in the state of Alaska. In the case of AMU, it's considered a private organization and wouldn't qualify. In the case of PERS, it's all school districts as well as specifically AMU or University of Alaska and the community colleges also are covered in a particular section, as well as a particular law that allows NEA to participate. But the general law for allowing them in is...
Institution of higher learning, like an accredited basis.
Well,
that's on the...
That's for outside service, but to be an, be a district as a member, let me see if I can locate that.
This will have all come about for what event in history? That is, this the perils of AMU as an ongoing institution, and however, you know, maybe they will have recouped it here. Well, maybe that's not a factor.
Will this have the effect of allowing employees AMU in the future to come into the system? And is this a sort of a beginning of bringing AMU into the PERS system?
I don't know. I don't think this would is trying to establish them as an employer eligible to participate. It's just saying that those employees who were there, I don't know whether that at a future date the consideration could or couldn't. Some of you may, the logic may fall is that if they join the system, you want to buy in, why don't you want AMU just join?
Yeah. Well, I guess my tendency is to sort of be reluctant against this bill, but if the legislature feels that AMU is worthy to come into the system, that they ought to establish that, and then let anybody with past service buy into the system as a member of the system.
I got a real problem with that. This is something that we've been looking at. As a matter of fact, I've asked Bob Richardson to prepare some data for me on this. And it's strictly the consideration of, well, two considerations. If AMU can participate in the system, and we'll use our prime example, why can't Wiles Hardware, Skinner's, and some of these other join? Mm-hmm. I know that APA is looking to join in the system. One of the main reasons that we're very concerned in this area is, in particular, with the federal legislation called ERISA. It's the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, and there are various provisions. It's kind of put in perspective, small print booklet that's about this thick, and that's the act. And I've asked Bob to clearly identify as best he can in this law anything that would have an impact on the system. Okay. But, you know, the reason I bring this up is that public plans are not subject to ERISA. But to allow a private employer or a nonprofit employer, which is subject to ERISA, into your plan, then you may make your total plan subject to ERISA. This is being looked at to see if that is a valid conclusion. Most feel that it is. But if you're then subject to ERISA, what does that mean? Well, there are certain inherent costs that you have. For example, the one big one is that if an employee terminates currently under the PERS or the teachers and takes a refund, there's no liability to the system for that employee. The person has left and that's it. Under ERISA, even though the employee left, took a total refund, the employee would be eligible for a benefit based on the employer's contribution associated with him. So immediately, anybody who's ever terminated, and if you start looking at turnover studies and people who take refunds, you recognize that there's a tremendous benefit that's payable to all these employees. Now if that's there, that's just one provision I'm aware of myself in paging through the bill. If that's there, the impact of the cost to every employer in the system by allowing a nonprofit or a public or a private institution to come into either system may make the may create a burden on the whole system, a very costly burden on the system. Now, you look at NEA, for example, and you look at the Alaska Municipal League under PERS, and you say, are they truly public entities, or are they private, or are they non-profit? I tend to lead a little bit to the other way. I think the argument would be more along the lines that, from our standpoint, is that the act, the bill itself, you know, kind of going through what we would say, if they came and say, we challenge your plan, we say it's subject to ERISA because you've got these particular entities in there. I think our answer would be is that they were in there at the time or very close to the enactment of the law, and therefore, you can't retroactively disqualify us. That in general, our plan has been a public plan. But I think at any time now or in the future, you would have a harder time saying we weren't aware of it, or they came in before the act, because if you start to allow people come in, or organizations come in after the act, and we've had 3 years to study it, we'd have a hard time defending it. That's just general information and kind of long. I'm just trying to make you aware of that information.
Is it true that NEA staff are in the TERS system or the PERS system?
Yeah, they're under the TERS, not the PERS.
Oh, okay. There's one other thing I want to just correct a statement that I made earlier. The benefit granted for people who were for former service with territory or Corps engineers or whatever before it was a state, that pension paid by the PERS system is reduced by any pension that they would get from that service with the state or federal government, the territory of federal government.
I was wondering, Paul, if the do you think the PERS is attached on because of the teacher retirement and outside service? This was just an extension, or it happened because of the TRS?
I think there's a tendency that whatever happens in one system, it's good for one, it's good for the other. I think there's
even though the two systems do not have the same.
Right, there's certain
teachers.
Reasons for outside service and teachers and or ability to buy in under teachers. There's a reason for that. That same ability to buy in under PERS doesn't exist, and there's reasons for that. But if you don't understand those reasons and you draft a bill, there's just a tendency to say, well, gee, if you've got teachers, you're going to let the NAAMU. What about the other half? I guess they'd be in PERS, so you put them in the PERS. There's that tendency. There's leapfrogging. Trying to make the two systems look alike and things like that, but maybe Ken knows better than I do, and maybe I don't know whether you can state the reasons, what confidentiality you've got there, but to maintain. But I don't know.
Well,
there is a little bit of it, I guess.
It's easy to answer the question in general, and I think Paul said it right. I mean, yeah, people tend to look from one system to the other, and. When you're looking at a benefit, and you said, well, Joe Blow gets this benefit under the teacher system, and my friend Fred here is just the same, except that he's under the other system, and he's not getting the benefit, and we want him to. And I think very often the reasoning doesn't go any further than that. I'm not speaking to any particular case, but I think it's obvious and it's clear that kind of thing happens.
Isn't there some legislation pending now, or it may even have already been enacted, whereas the commissioners of war
don't receive any of those type of benefits. And that one, is, maybe I saw it as a recommendation in the salary commission.
I'm not aware of any commission that's, any member of a commission that's a member of our system by the fact of their commission. There may be people who are on commissions who are state employees on a particular commission. I can't think of any, but what I'm trying to say is if they're in the system, they're in the system because they are an employee of a participating employer. I'm not aware of anybody who's in our system as a result of their being on a commission.
I have a copy of the commission's report.
I'll look at it again. That may be where I saw it. It may have been a recommendation.
Recommendation could be.
We're probably far enough along for someone to make a motion.
Then I would say that in addition to our recommendation on the first phase of this pertaining to AMU participation in TRS, as was indicated, that with regard to the second section pertaining to AMU employment and the PERS system, that our report include a do not recommend passage in view of the fact that the function and the funds that would be involved are not properly within the realm or the intent of the use of PERS funds, and that however we would accept the fiscal note as attached.
See, maybe we should break that down into the fiscal note first.
I thought we already did that.
Oh, did we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we don't need to say anything about the fiscal note. So your motion would be then to recommend do not recommend passage. Is there a second on that motion?
I'll second that.
Discussion?
I think the whole bill is a little premature. Who knows whether AMU is going to be in existence next year.
I don't know how to evaluate that. It might be in existence, and maybe they'll pick up their own responsibilities, you know. But that remains to be determined.
This only speaks to the retroactivity of it.
Now, it singles out, it must be 5 years, it can't be more than that, and it has to be within a certain period of time. That service must have been performed before July 1, 1976. So I call for the question.
Further discussion. I would like to state that I would rather see a no recommendation on this come from the board, for the reason that the bill is going to go back and it's going to be amended. We may not know what it's going to look like, but we do not know what it's going to look like when it's come back. They may come back with a totally different structure.
Well, but Mike, I mean, that's going to be true of any bill that we have here in front of us, and I think that it has to be clear, and that it is clear, that what you're speaking to is this bill.
Yeah.
But the way it's drafted now, if they change it to be something else with the... same number, I don't think that the board's recommendation could be construed to apply to.
I'm not hard pressed on this one. I feel that I just feel inclined to be more definitive about it than that.
Well, I tend to agree with Kent that a no recommendation would speak to the whole thing and not point out any specific reason. Is that what you're saying?
No. I was just saying that I don't think. I think if you want to make a recommendation on the public policy purpose of this, which is the way I interpreted fact that this bill may be changed into something else at some later point, I think it's not a good reason to withhold your recommendation at this point, because that's always going to be true.
Yeah. Well,
and the recommendation would be attached to this particular bill and not a later CS or anything else, but the board would still have gone on record basically as opposing using the public employees retirement system to assist AMU, and they could read between the lines however much they wanted to, and in trying to generalize that,
in most general
recommendation. But in other words, I wouldn't shy away from making a recommendation just because it might be changed. That it always has to go to the piece that's in front of you. I think, you know, for all I know, that there are CSs in that haven't crossed my desk yet on some of these others that I'm not aware of even at this point. But that's always going to be true. You know, the system is ongoing even, you know, as we sit here.
The only outside consideration was the one that Merritt pointed to, was that because teachers bring in outside service, is there some point in time when first employee should have that opportunity? And in a real general sense, maybe that could be true, but there were special features about the recruiting of teachers over time, and it in itself has kind of disappeared. I guess that wouldn't be a redeeming feature, really. That's the proper question.
Okay. Question. Then the motion is a yes vote would recommend do not pass, and a no vote would recommend pass. So, Jerry?
Yes.
Stan?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Merritt?
Yes. Same. I think the problem is if that is permissible, to are saying.
I'm sure.
I would think so.
I think you all get to decide.
okay, Paul?
Yes.
And chairman will vote yes. And one absent.
Right. May I read this back, and I think I paraphrased what you said. Let me make sure this is all right. Do not recommend passage in view of the fact that the function that would be served is not consistent with the purposes or intent of the retirement system.
The PERS retirement system.
I guess it, just as a procedural question, it's up to the, I believe anyway, it's up to the board. In any formal proceedings to allow extension or not allow extension. And so if you...
was concerned about that, but is it possible for a person to have had their teaching service first, then go into territorial employment and state employment, and now get territorial credit for it, for the teacher retirement system?
Well,
if the teaching preceded the...
I don't think it makes any difference. Under membership service in the teacher system, it says membership service means service as a teacher in a public school in the territory or state of Alaska or both.
Yeah.
So, if you were a teacher in the territory, you're covered under the PERS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were a PERS employee, and you're under the PERS, there's a section underneath here that says territorial services, page 42. What is 42? Earlier service. An employee who completes 3 years of service to the state after July 1, 1961, for which he makes contribution progress checks entitled to credit for employment under the state, former territory of Alaska before July 1, 1961, regards to the office department, division or agency of the state or territory in which it's employed, including specific type of service, federal service.
I guess my concern is that this is going to count both for teacher retirement and for PERS as well. Is that...
So what I'm saying is under the current statute,
subsection B specifically prohibits that.
I think there's a section, if I might be wrong, but I think, I keep thinking that there's something that says a credit is granted here, it's not granted over there, or something like that. That if service is recognized in one, it's not recognized in the other. There's something like that around, maybe there's no draft there. I end up where I excluded everything.
Where you just read there, you said it was prior to 1961. Can claim that.
Did this pose to...
It speaks to earlier service, and it says, an employee completes 3 years of service with the state after July 1, 1961, so which makes contributions.
So that might be it there, because this says, who had rendered service to the territory before January 3, 1959.
What's that related
so
to?
So if it's somebody that was between 59 and 61, would that be affecting that?
Well, it's not business for a teacher.
So I understand this to mean that somebody who had service with the territory of Alaska...
Not as a teacher, but
And to use it under the TRCS system, and I said, we don't allow that, do we?
Not currently.
Why are they proposing to do this? They will allow it under PERS. Why are they wanting to qualify it under TRS?
Evidently, there's a person or persons unknown that has completed 15 years of service as a teacher, has some amount of service as a territorial public employee, not as a teacher, because if it were teaching service, he could already claim it.
He can claim it under PERS already.
Well, but suppose it were fewer than 5 years, say not enough to vest in the PERS system.
But he has to have 15 of TRS,
right.
So it's supplementary anyway you look at it.
Well, that's right. But see, for example, if he had, say if he were a public employee from 55 through 58 for the territory.
He can get credit for that.
No.
Yes, he can.
How?
Well, I'm saying that's in the works. We have a crossover.
No, there's a bill in there.
You can add PERS to TRS, and the vice versa is true.
Not
any exceptions.
Any Alaska.
Yes. Any Alaska is...
Reclassify the type of service for which TRS retirement credit is given. And secondly, I recognize that there's pending legislation that would make a more proper allowance for credit to such individuals. Either 634 or 284, whichever one does this. And I think that such kind of service should be accounted for by the fund which properly relates to that realm of activity. I'll call for the question, and would you kind of review what the motion is and what a yes or no vote signifies?
The motion is that this board recommend a due pass on this legislation. A yes vote would be for passage of it. A no vote would be for no passage.
Question?
Is there any further discussion? Question. Jerry?
I'll say yes.
Stan?
No.
Mike?
Yes.
Merrick?
No.
Paul?
No.
And chairman will vote no.
Now, is that...
I was just going to ask him for the vote. What was the total?
Four no's, two yeses, and one absent.
We should probably
put that
include a reason.
The motion.
Well,
because my question was really when you vote, this was a positive motion, and we voted it down. How then does the recommendation go in?
I think it would be better turned around to say that the board recommends or does not recommend passage, mm-hmm. instead of that the board voted to not recommend passage.
The board does not recommend
it. In view of the board's vote to disapproval of the recommendation, I would propose a recommendation that the board oppose this bill.
That would put it...
Maybe without objection, the same vote could stand on that motion properly aligned.
Are there any objections to rephrasing it in any other... So the motion, if there are no objections, then...
How's it going to read now?
Okay, motion...
Okay, the board...
Do not pass.
Recommend.
Motion. Board recommends... Or does not recommend passage.
Well, I can't object that, because it looks like it was unanimous and it wasn't.
No,
with the same vote.
With the votes except
aligned
properly. Board does not recommend passage.
By a vote of 4-2 with one abstention. One absent.
I need to ask you this. On these report sheets, which I will attach to the bills and put in, do you want it to show the vote if it's not unanimous by name, or do you just want to count?
Well, see, I almost was going to suggest another topic for discussion, including the initial one of abstention. I personally would feel that there'd be only special circumstances one in which that one should be used, like ignorance, like you've been absented for being called away and so forth. I don't like to see this, now I'm speaking in my own mind, not anybody else's, mm-hmm. but I think it evades the intent. Now, and then jumping to the second aspect, whether or not we're held accountable, the board responsible for a final vote. And the legislature still are going to exercise its prerogatives. See, so I don't know that is a finite point there that you raised there about whether we have to be held accountable. He said yes, and so forth. Somebody goes back and reviews it, and
Well, it's for sure that this is a... that this is a public record, and if somebody wants to find out,
I think it should be available. But I don't know that we should.
It's available. All I'm wanting to know is
I prefer
is
to see
format. What you want me to put on
the tabulation shown, and then the vote is available. If somebody wants to ferret it out.
I have a question. The reason I abstained on that last vote, and I think it's something we have to settle, was simply because my preference on the one prior to this would have been no recommendation. And it seemed that was my purpose, or I had mixed feelings about it, because I thought if it was fair for TRS, it perhaps should be for PERS too. And so I abstained because I did not want to oppose, nor did I want to recommend. So that's probably a matter that we need to decide in the future.
Well,
if I had voted, that was to vote against it, and I didn't want to vote against it, but I wasn't for it either.
I would think that we have more abstentions than we have yeses for the motion. That then the next question would be, do we want to rephrase our motion? Our recommendation would be no recommendation, and then we vote again, and we can't get everybody still abstains, then I would defer to the first one and leave it stand as it was. If a second vote, everybody changed and said, yes, we can support it, do not recommend.
A majority of abstention would pretty much be an indication of no recommendation.
That's why I'd like to see the abstention retained in the vote.
As far as the, what we just discussed on the tally, I think that it's proper for us to show the tally of the vote, but not necessarily by name of who voted. But I think that gives a better indication to the legislature. If it's
the
unanimous, then
the board tally.
But if it's some think they'll want to look and see who voted which way.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think they're interested in who voted what, but if it's a split vote of 4-3 or something like that, that gives them a little more information.
I think about the only other way of really clarifying it would be is, okay, the vote before us is this bill. How do you vote? I vote recommend passage. I vote I do not recommend passage. I vote no recommendation. Have us vote that particular way is either for, again, or no recommendation. That way, instead of having five yeses and one no, what is the one no? The one no may be no recommendation rather than
that's kind of interesting.
And then we'd have a positive motion. I have some trouble with a negative motion as we've been getting
here.
There's
no reason the board need be bound by it, that there would be convenience and clarity associated with adopting that kind of language that says recommend. Now here's what you recommend: do pass, do not pass, or no recommendation. You know, and adopt those three as categories with room for your reasons. You know, to clarify your feelings along
would,
those lines.
Would the board like to adopt a policy of voting in that manner?
I think it's interesting.
Because here's a case in point right here.
It might be cumbersome.
This is going to be awkward to say it this way. The way, I mean, I think there was one other phrased in this way, that the board does not recommend passage by a vote of 4-2. That's just, it's kind of hard to follow exactly,
Could be misread.
What happens there. Even though this language you might want to not be quite so strong as to recommend do not pass, I think in the interest of clarity that's advisable language.
It seemed like the recommendation should be more pertinent. Yeah, so that it's the final note, and that you don't have to go yet an editorializing effort to clarify it.
Well, I think this is where we were probably the case where we're talking about their space for minority opinions.
Certainly.
And I think in our reasons that go along with each vote, that we should probably say here the main reason for the yes vote and the main reason for the no vote.
I think we could probably go so far and say that the board's recommendation is, whatever the tally is, no recommendation. Let's say there was, or let's say that the vote was 5-1-1. 5 yes, recommend passage. 1 no, I don't recommend passage. And 1, I have no recommendation. That could be stated. I think from that we can say that 5-1-1. And so the board itself is recommended do not pass as a total committee.
Mm-hmm.
However, the individual recommendations of each member were, and then we've got them.
Well, then if you go that route, sort of you get into